Good morning. I'm Sheila Cass. We're on the record. They're creepy, they're crawly, and though their average size is less than an inch, the presence of this tiny arachnid can make a surprising number of people of all ages squirm or run shrieking from the room. We're talking about spiders, and our guest today believes spiders get a bad rap. Jane Marlowe is a nature educator and a certified animal behavior specialist. In simple terms, she is dedicated to making humans and animals understand each other better and live together more peacefully. Marlowe's experience includes more than a decade in wildlife education and animal care and husbandry at the Maryland Zoo in Baltimore and the National Aquarium. Now she operates her own business as an animal behavior consultant. She's also staff educator at the Marshy Point Nature Center, east of White Marsh. Tomorrow she'll be speaking at the Natural History Society of Maryland for the program Learn with Jane. Have you thanked a spider lately? From 2 to 4 p.m. Welcome to On the Record, Jane.
Thank you so much for having me.
Animal behavior specialist. What is that?
So I'm certified as a professional animal trainer. But usually I'll introduce myself as an animal behaviorist. And the reason that I do that is because most of what I'm using is not animal training in the sense that people are used to. When we think of animal training, we often think of teaching animals tricks. Instead, modern animal trainers use the field of applied behavior analysis to determine why the animal's doing the behavior, how that works for the animal, and then set up the environment and the consequences of the environment to encourage the animal to do the behaviors that we want and spend less time engaged in the behaviors that we don't want. So it really is a science. It's a little bit less about making the animal do the things you want to see and more about understanding how that behavior works for the animal.
Do you work with domestic and exotic animals?
My primary goal is to work with exotic. So I primarily work with animals that people don't think of immediately when they think of animal training. But I focus primarily on birds, reptiles, and exotic or non-domestic mammals. But another misunderstood animal that I spend a lot of time with are domestic cats. And the truth is that as long as an animal can perceive something in its environment and remember the consequences of that thing that it experienced and its behavior, it can learn. And if an animal can learn, you can teach an animal how to respond to things. So cats can certainly be trained, rats, stingrays, octopi, even wasps can be trained to do scent work. In fact, they can be trained to sniff bombs, cadavers, and other items faster than a dog can.
That's amazing. That is totally amazing. But I want to sort out one detail before we go further. You said you work mostly with exotics.
Yes.
And then you talked pretty quickly about domestic cats, which most of us would not consider exotics. What, in your definition, what's an exotic?
So when we say an exotic animal, it's kind of a broad term. It's not very scientifically defined, but what we really mean is non-domestic. A non-domestic animal is an animal that through generations hasn't been changed from its wild form. So when we think of a domestic animal, we don't just mean that they're tame or that they're socialized to humans. We mean that this animal has been bred by humans and been living around humans for generations, and they're now different. So a dog, a cat, a horse, they've all changed somewhat from their wild ancestors. They've been domesticated. A parrot that was raised by humans, may really like humans, may spend a lot of time around humans, if it had been raised by parrots, it would be exactly the same as a wild parrot. So these are animals that are not prepared to live with humans. Evolution didn't set them up. They haven't been set up by nature to cope with the human environment. And one of my jobs as an animal behavior consultant is to help give people the tools they need to help their animals cope with this very different environment than what the animal was adapted for. We spend a lot less time with exotic animals teaching fun, entertaining tricks like sit or to shake paws or any cute behaviors. And we spend a lot more time teaching these animals to participate in their own care. So things like nail trims or going into a travel crate or even just getting used to people coming in and out of their habitat. That can be a big challenge for animals, especially formerly wild animals, to cope with. So we're trying to give the humans that are caring for the animals and the animals themselves the tools that they need to understand how they can live in a way that's stress-free around humans.
Who usually engages your services? Do you work primarily with institutions, or do you work with individuals who have a problem pet?
It's actually a mix between private clients who might have a pet that they're having an issue with, and also what I would call my institutional clients. And my institutional clients are mostly nonprofits. Nonprofits kind of like me because I don't charge for nonprofits for my services. My main goal for my business is to help improve relationships between humans and animals. It's not to make a profit per se.
Well, on the private client side, I mean, how does that work? If I have a cat that, say, attacks feet.
Okay.
What do you do that helps undo that behavior?
So animals don't just do behaviors out of the blue. A behavior doesn't occur in a vacuum. That's a really common thing that you'll hear science-based animal behavior consultants and behaviorists say, because behavior is surrounded by stimuli. There's stimuli is anything that an animal can perceive in its environment. So it could be a sound, it could be a noise, it could even be the temperature or humidity, depending on what's important and what's relevant to that animal. If we're saying, okay, this cat's attacking feet, and the function of the behavior is to drive away something it doesn't like, for instance, strangers in the house. Some of the first things we look at is how can we change the immediate environment to make it so that the cat wouldn't show these sorts of behaviors. So if we notice that it's a certain area of the house, or if it's a certain way that visitors are interacting, maybe the cat ignores visitors if the visitors ignore them, but it's when they try to pet the cat or go after the cat that the cat starts being afraid. Many times what we'll see before an extreme behavior like attacking feet, we'll also see subtle signs of body language that let us know the animal's uncomfortable. So being extremely sensitive to the animal's body language is a skill that any good animal trainer, any good behaviorist can have. It's a lot like talking in a foreign language. We don't come knowing how to speak cat. We have to learn it. And it can be very difficult to be fluent. Many times we'll see things like tail lashing or ears going to the side before these problem behaviors start. And what we want to do is address the issue when those subtle signs, when the animal starts saying, I'm not totally okay with this, so that we can change things so that they don't feel they have to move to more extreme behaviors. Sometimes the easiest way to solve a behavior is simply to remove the stimulus that's triggering it. I've had clients come to me and say, whenever I poke my bird in the chest, it bites me. What should I do? And the easiest way to stop that behavior is just to stop doing it to that animal. Not every animal is going to like to do everything that you see them doing on YouTube or, you know, an internet search. You know, we'll see parrots being very cuddly on a YouTube video and people think that their parrot should be cuddly too. So understanding what your individual animal needs is important as well. If there's a situation where we can't avoid the antecedents, which are the stimuli that happen before the behavior, if we can't avoid them, then we start to teach animals appropriate choices to get the same results.
That's nature educator and animal behavior specialist Jane Marlowe here on The Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. She'll be talking about spiders and why we should appreciate what they do for us tomorrow afternoon at the Natural History Society of Maryland. Your Facebook profile, which is just one line, says, quote, I like cute, fuzzy things like spiders, close quote. Why do you like spiders?
We don't often come learning to like spiders, and I certainly didn't. When I was a little girl, I remember walking into a spider web once and being beside myself that the spider might be on me somewhere. It might be hiding. It might be ready to bite me and hurt me later. So I didn't come with thinking that spiders were cute, fuzzy things that I really, really liked. I had to develop that taste for them, and that was by learning about them. And when you actually spend the time to get to know spiders, you start to learn amazing things about them. Spiders are amazing architects. They build fantastic, not just the orb webs we're used to, but spiders can build fantastic structures that they use to protect their egg sacs and catch their prey. Some spiders are expert dancers, and many spiders are doting, loving mothers. And when you start to see the complexity and how interesting these animals are, we start to understand them as what they are. They're thinking, feeling organisms just like we are, trying to cope in the world. They're not out there to bite and to grab and to make our lives hard. And the more I learned about spiders, the more I became fascinated about them, and also realized that they're doing a lot of great work for humans. They're very important to humans. They're out there helping us. They're doing their jobs. And when we look at them as something that's helping us, whether we appreciate them or not, it kind of motivates me to be a better helper to them too and share the word about the good work that they're doing.
I want to hear more about what they do, but first I want to meet, you have brought a friend with you.
I have brought a friend.
Who is this?
This is Jeepers, and Jeepers is one of my tarantulas that I care for. Jeepers is a Chilean rose tarantula, so this is not a spider that we have in Maryland. This is a spider that, as its name suggests, would be found in Chile. But she is a very large spider. But not the largest spider. Tarantulas can get larger than this.
She is what? 3 inches? 4 inches?
She's about, I would say leg span is about 5 inches if she spread them completely out.
And she's very furry.
She is very furry.
You describe spiders as furry, but the ones I see scurrying around my house, I don't think of as furry.
Not every spider has fur on them, yeah. So different spiders have different adaptations, and some spiders are very smooth, very shiny, but other spiders like tarantulas are almost rodent-like in how furry they are. They use their fur to help control their body temperature, but they also use their fur for a sensory function. So they're going to be able to feel air currents moving around them. Spiders are a lot more into getting away from a predator than they are trying to sneak into houses and bite you while you sleep. To my best knowledge, there's no spider that's what their goal is. Their goal is to stay safe from things that want to eat them and eat the little things that they eat.
The subtitle of the talk you're giving tomorrow asks, have you thanked a spider lately? Why should I thank a spider?
Well, the truth is, many people think of spiders as harmful animals, but the most harmful spider living in Maryland is really any spider that's been killed by a human being, because the truth is, they have a lot of good work to do for us. They will control pests. One of the major pest species for food crops in the United States are different types of moths that feed on food crops when they're caterpillars. And web-building spiders are amazing predators of moths. And in our own homes, these guys will help control silverfish, cockroaches, and other pests that actually do damage to the food that we eat, as opposed to the spiders, which are just interested in being the cleanup crew for us. One of my favorite animals to see in my backyard are hummingbirds. And another amazing animal in my backyard is the goldfinch. Both of these are tiny birds that have amazing colors. They are like little jewels of the forest. Both of these birds use spiders as an important food source during nesting season to get protein for their chicks. And they also use spider web as a component in their nesting. So if we like songbirds, if we like cute, colorful little birds, we also have to appreciate spiders, because you can't have one without the other.
Since spiders do so much for us, you're going to be talking about how to safely remove one from your home. How do you do that?
The safest way to remove a spider from your home is actually just to use two things that most people have around their homes, which is a cup or a plastic container and a stiff piece of paper. What you would do is, when you locate the spider, very gently lower the cup around the spider and then slide a piece of paper underneath of the spider to trap it in the cup. Once you have your spider safely in the cup, you can take it outdoors. This time of year, it's very cold, so if a spider's moved into the house, it may be seeking warmth, so you might need to wait for a warm, sunny day to put the spider outside, and most spiders will do fine sitting in a cup securely for a few days before the weather turns nice and you can put it outside.
So you just keep it in the cup in your house?
Yeah, most spiders are okay going without food or water for a couple days while you wait for the sun to warm up, and once it's a good time to take the spider outside, you don't even need to wait for it to leave the cup if you don't want to. You can just open the cup, put it on the ground in a sunny spot, and come back for it later. They're not going to be able to bite through the stiff piece of paper. They're going to be securely inside of the cup while you carry it outside. And you don't even have to hang around to make sure that it's safe. So if you don't like spiders, you don't have to come in physical contact with these little guys to give them a safe trip outside.
This is all fascinating. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And thanks, Jeepers. Jane Marlowe is a nature educator and a certified animal behavior specialist. You can see her and her tarantula in person and learn more about them at the Natural History Society of Maryland event, Learn with Jane. Have you thanked a spider lately? It starts at 2 p.m. tomorrow, Saturday, at 6908 Bel Air Road. We have a link to more information at the On the Record page at WYPR.org. I'm Sheila Cass. This is On the Record. After a break, a Stoop Story.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.